What are vaccines and how do vaccines work in the body?
Well, vaccines are an inoculation that are intending to spark immunity in the population. This is what they say. And vaccines are made by taking animal tissues of different types of animals, such as bovine, cow, a pig, swine, and joining these together, splicing them together into a viral protein that is supposed to be injected into the body, thereby causing the body to manufacture antibodies against that particular viral protein.
Now, I've heard much of this science is based on theory. Is there scientific evidence this is actually what happens in the body?
Well, it's theoretical. It is not something that has necessarily been proven whatsoever. It is conducted in lab environments that are devoid of all the environments in the body. So you have bacteria, phagocytes, parasites, fungus, all the cells of the body, all the mechanisms of the body. These are not involved in these lab environments. So they're not going to be observing what is actually taking place in the body. They're not going to be seeing reality.
In some ways, this seems counterintuitive to what we understand about the immune system. Does this theory about vaccines go against logical reasoning and the way the immune system functions?
Well, that's right. The immune system is able to deal with anything that comes from outside the body anyway. So the idea of sparking immunity through injecting disease or injecting dead viral tissues and injecting animal tissues, along with these chemical stabilizers that are in the vaccines, these are not going to cause immunity. There really is no such thing as immunity. It is the whole of the body that is the immune system, and not antibodies. So even if antibodies are created during the vaccination process, this means nothing because antibodies are always going to be created when you have something in the body that does not belong there. So that could be anything. That could be a blood clot. That could be a splinter in your hand. So anything that doesn't belong in the body.
What are the ingredients in vaccines?
Well, there's a partial list on most vaccine inserts that you can find online, or if you have it in person, it will be in the insert of the box or on the paperwork. However, most of the ingredients are not listed. And so experiments have had to be done in order to determine what exactly are the constituents in the vaccines. Now, the major ones we really need to be concerned about are the adjuvants. And of course, you have the preservative serums and the chemical constituents of the vaccine.
Is there real evidence these are actual ingredients in vaccines?
Yes, but only indirectly. In other words, they don't admit that these are actually the ingredients. In the book, The Only Answer to Cancer by Leonard Coldwell, this is written in 2009, he lists the ingredients in the book, and I have included that in my book as well. I'll just list a few of these. Formaldehyde, this is a preservative. You have glycerol, it's a solvent. It is also used in antifreeze. You have ethylene glycol, antifreeze. It's proven to have neurotoxic side effects. You also have human diploid cells from aborted fetal tissue. Monosodium glutamate, MSG, cancer causer. Also, neomycin, which is an antibiotic. Residual MRC5 proteins. These are chemically isolated toxic proteins from cancerous DNA. Sodium phosphate, which is a solvent. Dangerous, even life-threatening. Toxicity may occur while using sodium phosphate if you have kidney disease, have congestive heart failure, have an electrolyte imbalance, or are on a sodium-restricted diet. And you have thimerosal, which is still included in many flu shots in the multi-dose vials. They have not taken that out. They have removed it from some flu shots, the single dose. And you have to ask them if it has thimerosal in it or not, and they probably don't even know. You also have tributyl phosphate, a solvent and plasticizer, and Triton X100, which is a strong detergent. You have squalene, causes severe arthritis and lupus in humans at only 10 to 20 parts per billion. And so that is just a partial list of possible ingredients that are included in different vaccines. One of the main constituents that we need to focus on, though, is the adjuvant, which is an aluminum nanoparticle solution. These are very small, very tiny particles of aluminum that can pass through the blood-brain barrier and through the gut wall. It passes through tissue because it's so incredibly small. Now, the stated purpose of these adjuvants is to irritate the immune response along with the viral tissue, because the viral tissue is not adequate enough to spark the level of immune response that they desire. So it is bound along with the adjuvant.
Are there known effects of the accumulation in the body?
Oh, absolutely. When you inject an adjuvant such as this into the body will go into shock. So it creates an immune system response almost immediately. So antibodies are going to be created, but because you are dealing with a metal in the body that does not belong there, they will become mutated. And so the body will be elevated for very long periods of time, and this eventually, gradually erodes the nervous system, especially in a child, because a child does not yet have a fully developed myelination around the brain, which is a protective sheath that covers the brain. Now, during this process, the phagocyte will come in to feed upon and eliminate this foreign debris that has been injected into the body. And since the adjuvant has been joined in the vaccine along with the serum, it is one whole unit. So it is not just a viral tissue. The viral tissue has been bound with the adjuvant. So it will come in and eat on that tissue, and it will also bring along with it a small portion of the aluminum. And that aluminum will stay in the phagocyte as it travels along in the body to different places. Now, because the body uses metallic minerals to conduct light and electricity throughout the nervous system, the phagocyte will attempt to deliver these minerals to the brain and will eventually wither away and die in the brain because the metal is causing toxicity in that cell. And it will wither away and leave a deposit behind. So it will deposit a particle of aluminum. Now you have many, many cells that do this and you have a problem. You have many cells that are dying because they have been contaminated by this aluminum adjuvant. So they make their way to the brain and they end up dying eventually. They leave behind a deposit. And because in a child, the sheath around the brain has not fully developed, the ability for these aluminum particles to pass through the sensitive tissues of the brain is much easier. And so they end up settling, causing what's called sedimentation, where the metals will settle in the brain.
Last time we spoke about some of the ingredients in vaccines, some of them being heavy metals that store in tissues in the body and the implications for our health. Is there real evidence of this?
Yes, the studies have been conducted that have shown without doubt that the processes of phagocytosis will deposit aluminum from vaccination. And the aluminum will settle in the brain and in the nervous system areas. Because the brain and the nervous system are using metals to conduct light and electricity, they end up finding their way to the brain to deliver the mineral, and when they die, they leave behind a deposit. Now, before they took thimerosal out of most vaccines, that was a major cause of autism, because the metals will settle in the brain and eventually cause coagulation of the blood, because the blood will become constricted due to the loss of zeta potential, which is just the ability for these free-flowing agents to move through the vessels and the capillaries unabated. And when a cell is traveling along these hair-like vessels, these capillaries, they roll down the side of the vessel, of the capillary. Now, when the zeta potential falls too low, the cells cannot flow freely, and they cannot flow in a single file line. They begin to stick together, they stick to the wall of the vessel, and so on. And eventually, you have constriction of blood flow. The blood cells cannot deliver oxygen to the brain, you have a blood clot. So the child has a mini stroke. You have various levels of paralysis that occur from this. And this is the cause of autism. There is no doubt.
How many vaccines are given to children by the time they're 18 years of age?
Well, according to many vaccine schedules that I have personally seen, it is 70 plus by the time they're 18. Now, of course, those numbers are going to keep rising and rising. When I was a child, it was only 3 to 4. Now it's 70 plus. So we're talking about a lot of toxicity, and the potential is so high for damage. I don't see how anyone in their right mind could want to give their child or themselves 70 plus vaccines.
Why is this important for us to be aware of?
Because the incredible amount of toxicity that is stored by the body in general, let alone when you're vaccinated. Because when you put something into the tissue like that, it is stored because it's not going through the digestive system. It's not going through the regular routes of the cleansing processes of the body. And so far as the digestive system, very, very little of it is discarded when it is injected. 99.9% of it is absorbed into the tissue, into the cells, causing cellular degeneration, causing disease manifestation either immediately afterwards or in the long term. Now, when you're dealing with 70 plus vaccines, you're going to have a long-term effect if you're lucky enough that it doesn't kill you outright or it doesn't damage you immediately. But you're going to have this long-term effect of toxin accumulation. And so it may be 20 years in the future when you become an adult, when you become 30 years old, my age, that you will begin to develop disease. And therefore, the vaccine will not be blamed.
I've seen articles about court cases being settled with regard to vaccine injury. Is it true there's a vaccine court?
Yes, it's called the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, and it is a court system. Of course, they're not going by the same type of laws for some reason that the United States Constitution guarantees us. But nonetheless, this is a court that exists. There have been billions and billions of dollars given out to parents that have proven without a doubt that it has either paralyzed, killed, or maimed their child in some form or fashion. One major case was that of a 4-year-old girl who died of anaphylactic shock the day after receiving several childhood vaccines. And those parents received the maximum death benefit, which was $250,000.
I'm always confused about the flu vaccine because it's often reported that there are many strains of flu, and so the annual flu vaccine is actually a best guesstimate of the strains that will be most active that year. How do they decide which strains will be most active? How do they produce a vaccine fast enough each year based on their predictions?
Well, the fact is they don't. There are many strains of the flu virus. There are many strains of viruses in general. 320,000 variants that the body can call upon at any time. And as I've spoken about before, there is no circulating strain. In other words, there is no majority strain that is circulating amongst the population. That simply is not the case. Every single body has a different RNA and DNA, and each body is going to be manufacturing a different viral strain, whether that is a flu strain, a cold strain, or whatever other kind of strain. So you have different strains among every person in the population. Aside from that, when they release the flu vaccine, it only includes 1 to 2 strains and is 6 months too late. By the time they release it, that particular virus that they have called the majority strain has already left the population. In other words, the flu season is already over, and whoever is getting sick has already developed the virus and has gone through the processes of the viral detoxification. And these are nothing but guesstimations. They are estimates of what they think is the majority strain that is being passed amongst the population, and that is simply not going to do anything whatsoever.
There's often great controversy around an entire population receiving a specific vaccine. And I've always been curious about why people are afraid of others who have chosen against vaccines if they got it. If they got the vaccine, wouldn't they be immune?
Well, hypothetically speaking, yes, if the vaccine worked. But let's go on the basis that they do work and that they do cause people to become immune. Why is it that the people are wanting to force those that do not want to get the vaccine to get the vaccine if they can go get it and protect themselves, you see? And now they will say that it is in order for you to protect the vulnerable, the weak of society, those that are sick and not able to get the vaccine. This is the excuse that they use to persuade people into getting a vaccine that they otherwise would not get, and is merely another exploitation of the ignorance of people.
What is required in order to deem a vaccine safe?
There are safety trials that are conducted on people that play as guinea pigs, and as long as it doesn't kill or seriously injure a large portion of those people, it is deemed safe. Now, this means absolutely nothing in hindsight, because the vaccine causes damage over the long term. So even if the vaccine is considered, quote, safe, it really means nothing, because it would take 20 to 30 years to observe the effects of one single vaccine and the effects that it has upon the human body, you see. And as I've continually said, vaccines can never, ever be made safe by their very nature. Their very nature prevents them from ever being safe, because you are injecting viral protein, foreign animal tissue, into the body, which does not belong there. Even if you got rid of all the chemicals, all the adjuvants, all of those things that make up the vaccine, it would still be unsafe, because you are injecting foreign tissue into the body.
If our immune system builds in childhood, what are some of the critical factors to help it develop?
Bacteria, microbes. When a child is young, it is imperative that they are placing things in their mouth. When a child is born, for instance, when it exits the mother's womb, it is getting bacteria on it. When the doctors touch the baby, they are transferring the bacteria to the baby, and the bacteria is going to come into the body, and the mother is going to pass her bacteria into the baby, and the baby will develop over time the bacteria colonies, the environment for these bacteria to flourish and thrive, and the immune system will gradually build up. Now, when you're injecting garbage into the baby and you're giving him medication and antibiotics and everything else you can imagine, the baby's simply not going to thrive, as I have just said. It will decline right after birth, and it will never develop properly. And so there are all kinds of problems that will occur because of this, see? And the body, if it is allowed to develop properly, if, for instance, the mother is passing bacteria and minerals and enzymes through the milk properly, and all of these things are occurring, the human body is very resilient, and the immune system will be very strong. So the whole of the body will be strengthened. We must think of it as the foundation of a house, almost. It is the foundation which everything flourishes from there on in.
Can we boost our immune system, as I see marketed in so many supplement bottles?
Absolutely not. As I wrote about in my book, the number one problem that I had that was placed in my mind by other people, which is the idea that supplements are necessary to be healthy. Well, actually, as I observed, supplements cause disease because you are dealing with nutrients that have been cauterized, they have been heated up, they're synthetic in many cases, and you're taking these minerals and these nutrients in, but the body cannot utilize them. They're not absorbable. Very small portions are absorbable. The rest is discarded or stored by the body. And a large portion is stored, causing toxic accumulation. So no, supplements do not give you a healthy immune system or body. There are very few supplements, and I wouldn't even call them supplements. It's more like in the food category that are going to benefit you. But when it comes to supplements that you buy at the store that come in a bottle, they're irradiated. They are dried. They have no life in them. They are dead food. And as I said, most of the time are synthetic, unless you're getting a natural derivative. And even if it is a natural derivative, it must be extracted from whatever it was part of before, and chemical solvents are almost always used.
In general, what are some of the most negative influences on the immune system?
Well, like I said, you have the antibiotics, you have drugs, medication, medical treatment that is given. You have all manner of air pollutions, fumes, gasoline, things such as secondhand smoking. There's the food aspect of it all. Preservatives in food, chemicals in food, genetically modified food. All of these things are playing a role, especially the food, especially the air pollution. And so there are a number of things that play a role when it comes to the immune system and the health of a person.
What is herd immunity? And what are some of the common misconceptions about herd immunity?
Herd immunity actually does not exist because viruses are not contagious. But the idea behind herd immunity is that viruses will circulate in a community. And there are two methods by which herd immunity can be accomplished. One is through inoculation. The second is through natural infection, which they call contagiousness, which passes the virus around until everyone's got it, so they say, and then no one gets it again. Of course, that's not what's happening. Herd immunity does not exist, as I said, because viruses are not contagious. In actuality, herd immunity is an indoctrination on many levels. It is a term that indoctrinates the people into believing that if everyone is protected, that the virus will disappear. But this is not what happens whatsoever. If everyone had the virus, the same exact people could end up developing the same virus again soon after or the following year in a different flu season, when detoxifications are occurring again in the population, in the body. And they state that up to 90% of the population must be vaccinated in order to establish herd immunity. Ultimately, herd immunity is nothing but an indoctrination, as I've said, in order to persuade those that do not want to get vaccinated. Their excuse is that it will harm those that cannot get the vaccine. In the end, herd immunity is merely an excuse in order to drive up the vaccination rates in the population, in order to bring it up near 90%. That way, the whole entire population has been inoculated with whatever vaccine they deem necessary. So, in order to get the vaccine rates to the point where they want, they must convince the people that the vaccine rate must increase, and those that do not want to get the vaccine are persuaded to get vaccinated to protect the vulnerable, thereby increasing the vaccination rate among the people.